From ancient times, the Gulf Arabs depended upon the treasures of the sea. Long before the discovery of oil, pearl diving and fishing were the main sources of income in the Arabian Gulf. Pearls have always been prized, and many of the world's finest pearls came from the waters of the Gulf. But the life of a diver was full of hardships and dangers. Not only was diving exhausting work, men suffered from cramps, skin diseases, dehydration and deafness, and drowning was not uncommon. To survive, a man required inner strength and courage. This is the story of one such man. The Pearl Diver. Written and read by Julia Johnson. Saeed looked at the strong black arms of the two oarsmen as they rowed the boat clear of the harbour. He listened to their song, the song of the pearlers, which they sang as they rowed. He could still see his little brother standing on the shoreline with his sisters. It would be the end of September before he saw them again, at the close of the pearling season. He hastily wiped his eyes with the back of his hand. His mother had called him her little man, and he was determined to behave like one. It was the middle of May, the start of the big dive in the Arabian Gulf. Saeed had always wanted to go with his father to the pearling banks. Although he was only six, the Nokuda, who was in charge of the sambuk, had agreed to take him on as a deckhand. He would have to catch fish and make coffee, and he would learn to dive. His father had promised to teach him. Already he could swim like a fish, and he had been secretly practicing holding his breath and slowly blowing out a stream of bubbles under the water. He wanted his father to be proud of him. It was said that Abdullah was one of the best divers. Saeed had heard the stories of how long his father could stay under the water, of how many oysters he could harvest, and of how deep he could dive. Only one man in 20, it was said, could go deeper than 16 fathoms. Saeed knew that the Nokuda was happy to have his father on board because it increased his chances of finding a really special pearl. Those found in deeper water were supposed to have a finer luster. The crew, too, would rejoice in a valuable catch, for they would receive a share of the profits. "But aren't you ever afraid, Father?" Saeed had asked. "You must learn the ways of the sea, my son, and know its secrets," Abdullah had replied. Saeed had wondered what he meant. "And I have Ahmed to look out for me," he added. "He is a good hauler, and I trust him as if he were my brother." Every diver had a hauler, and Saeed knew that the relationship between them was a very close one. The diver depended on his hauler to pull him from the sea as fast as possible when he tugged on the rope to let him know that he was ready to surface. Saeed turned now to see the men raising the huge white sails. The wind filled them, and the sambuk gathered speed. All around him, other boats flew over the sea. Saeed thought they looked like a great flock of big white birds. And in their wake, dolphins leapt and dived. This was a sign of good fortune. Saeed felt happy. Every year it was the same. Hundreds of boats set out from the towns along the coast. Saeed's grandfathers had been pearl divers, and their fathers before them. The fathers of his friends were divers too, or fishermen. Everyone depended on the sea for their livelihood. Pearls for trade, fish for food. Saeed looked down into the water's green depths and thought of the treasures waiting there to be discovered. The men on board were excited. The day before the diving began was full of expectation. Would this year's catch be better than last year's? Would the pearls fetch a higher price? But beneath the surface of the sea, there lurked danger as well. Saeed knew all about the terrible devilfish, which could wrap its many burning arms around you. His father sometimes wore a fine cotton suit to protect his body from those arms. Saeed knew about sharks and barracudas too, and their great teeth. He shuddered. In his grandfather's time, pirates had been common. They had robbed the boats and slit the throats of the crews. But thankfully, pirates were rare nowadays. Every year, several men did not come home. Some drowned because they surfaced too slowly. Some were taken by disease. Others perished from the fierce summer heat. They became dehydrated from lack of water. Saeed knew that the supply of water on board would be strictly rationed. One year, a shamal blew so fiercely it raised great clouds of dust, which became a thick fog. Over 100 boats and their crews were lost in the storm. Saeed thought of his little brother waiting for him. He thought of his mother and his sisters, and prayed to Allah to keep this crew safe. The Nohuda had the reputation for being a religious man. He had been the captain of a pearling boat for many years, and it was said that he was fair and just. Few accidents befell the men who dived for him, as he did not take unnecessary risks. For these reasons, men would travel far to join his crew. Saeed felt a hand on his shoulder. He looked up to see his father smiling down at him.
"We're about to drop anchor, Saeed. Then we'll have something to eat."
Saeed had been so busy daydreaming, he had not noticed the time passing. Now dusk was falling, and here they were at the pearling banks. He could see other boats already anchored, their sails coloured orange by the light of the fires burning on their decks. After supper, Abdullah found a space on the crowded deck and lay down. Saeed yawned drowsily and curled up next to his father. He was soon fast asleep. The men were up again before sunrise. They said their prayers and ate a few dates. Saeed knew they would not dive on full stomachs. He watched his father strip off his clothes and put beeswax in his ears and a goat horn clip on his nose. He helped him slip the leather sheaths onto his fingers and big toes to protect them from sharp rocks and shells and the spines of sea urchins. Then Abdullah slung a string bag round his neck and let himself down into the sea. Round his waist was a rope by which Ahmed could haul him up, and another over his foot, heavily weighted with a sinking stone to help him descend quickly. He was ready for his first dive of the season. He raised his hand to Saeed. Saeed smiled and watched his father's chest swell as he filled his lungs with air. Then he was gone. The water was fairly clear, and if Saeed looked hard, he could still make out the blurred shape of his father as he collected the oysters. Some were lying loosely on the sand, and he could see others attached to coral and seaweed. Just when he thought his father's lungs must surely burst if he stayed down a moment longer, Abdullah tugged on the second rope, and Ahmed hauled him to the surface. Saeed started in alarm when he saw him. Blood was pouring from his father's nose. But Abdullah called out to him, "It's all right, Saeed. A nosebleed on the first dive of the season is a good omen." And Ahmed nodded in agreement. Saeed thought it a strange sign of luck, but hoped it was true. He remembered the dolphins. They had been a sign of luck too. Ahmed reached down and took the basket of oysters from Abdullah and tipped them onto the deck. They would be opened the following morning before the day's diving began. Saeed picked up one of the shells and felt its roughness. The outside was really quite ordinary, he thought. If you didn't know, you would never imagine it could hold such surprises. He supposed people were a bit like that, too. He wondered if this oyster contained a pearl. A few did, many did not. There was a belief that a pearl was a drop of dew or rain, which the oyster had caught by rising to the surface at night or during a shower of rain. Said liked the story, but he knew it was not true. An oyster made its pearl around an intruder, perhaps a tiny worm or a speck of grit which was irritating it. He thought it very clever that something so small could make something so beautiful. His thoughts were interrupted by the Nokuda.
"Well, Said bin Abdullah," he said, "are you going to watch your father all day, or are you going to work for your living?"
Said dropped the shell and looked ashamed.
"It's all right, young man," said the Nokuda, and smiled at him. "Come along. I'll show you how to make good coffee. Your father and the other men will want their coffee when they take a rest."
He showed Said how to roast the coffee beans and how to grind them with a pestle and mortar. Then he added water to the ground coffee and put it over the fire. When it was boiling, he dropped in a few cardamom seeds. Towards evening, the Nokuda taught Said how to empty the big domed wire fish traps which had been put down the night before, and he learned how to prepare the fish for the men's supper. Abdullah was tired after his last dive. It had been a long day, and he had been diving for almost 8 hours, with only short rests at the surface. The fish and the rice smelled good. The men ate hungrily, and Said was pleased. He felt happy that he had done a day's work too.
"You have done well, my son," Abdullah said. "See, I have something for you."
And he gave Said a beautiful shell. Said stroked it. He liked its spines. There were 6 of them, like 6 fingers, and when he turned the shell over, its opening was smooth and pink.
"Put it to your ear," said Abdullah.
And when he did so, Said could hear the sound of the sea. "This must be one of the sea's secrets," he thought. He decided he would give it to his little brother when he returned home, and he held it close to him when he lay down to sleep by his father's side. Early the next morning, the crew sat round the large heap of oysters gathered during the previous day and set to work on them with crooked knives, under the watchful eye of the Nokuda. The voice of the Naham, the singer, was strong, and soon the men were working to his rhythm. They tossed the discarded shells back into the sea, and the gulls flew down, screeching and fighting over the soft, tasty flesh of the oysters. Most of the shells contained nothing of worth, but a few held small seed pearls, and 1 or 2 gave up more valuable treasures. The men placed the pearls between their toes, and the Nokuda collected them and wrapped them in a red cloth and locked them in a wooden chest on the deck for safe keeping.
"Doesn't anyone ever try to hide a pearl to keep for himself?" Said asked his father.
"It is important to be able to trust one another," Abdullah replied. "And only once have I known a man try to smuggle a pearl. It was a particularly beautiful one, a rose pearl, and he hid it under his tongue. But he was found out and severely punished. It was not the will of Allah to make him a rich man through dishonesty. But luck may come to the man who works hard."
Said thought about his father's words as he worked on the sambuk. He knew that all the divers were poor men, and the haulers were even poorer, as they were paid a lesser share because their work was not as dangerous. The Nokuda had paid them all advances, and they owed him money, which they would only be able to repay if profits were good. So Said wished for a tabra, a piece of good fortune for his father. Sometimes Said thought about his mother. She would have taken his brother and sisters back to her parents' home in the oasis, where the weather was less humid. The coast was no place for them to spend the summer. His father had asked a Bedouin to bring the camels for their journey. They would have travelled in a caravan with many other women and children, along with the men who were now too old to dive. But they would return to the coast at the end of the pearling season. Said imagined his mother standing on the shore, anxiously searching the distant horizon, as she did each year, praying for the safe return of his father. Long before she saw the shape of the boats, she would hear the sound of far-off chanting, as the song of the pearlers floated to her across the water. If he closed his eyes, Said could see her clearly in his mind. He could see the way her hair, tinted with henna, glinted in the sunlight. Sometimes he saw tears in the eyes of the men when they listened to the songs of the Naham as they worked, for he would sing of the women they had left behind. The days passed, one very much like another. Said was kept busy. The men quickly accepted him as part of the crew and told his father that he was a good worker for such a small boy. Occasionally, a shamal blew up. The dust and sand covered the deck, and Said was set to work sweeping it clean before the dew turned it to a coating of paste. Sometimes it was so bad they had to shelter behind the reef until it passed. Several days diving were lost. But the men were grateful for the rest, although the Nokuda generally managed to find plenty of work for them on board. There were sails and fish traps to repair, and barnacles to scrape off the underside of the boat. After a particularly violent storm had passed, the men hauled up the sails, and the Nokuda studied the sea. "Look," Said's father told him. "See how he reads the water for signs, just as the Bedouin reads the desert." It was true. The Nokuda needed no compass. The sea itself was his map. As they sped over the waves, following the Nokuda's commands, they could see in the distance a sambuk with a black flag thrown across the sail. Straight away, the Nokuda ordered his crew to bring down the sails, so that they might draw alongside the other sambuk.
"What is it, my friend?" he called. "Do your men need food or water?"
But the flag was not a cry for help. It was the sign of death. 6 men had been lost to the sea in the storm.
"May Allah preserve you from further sorrow,"
the Nokuda said.
"We were lucky," Abdullah said. "The Nokuda is a wise man. He knew the shamal was coming, and we sheltered before it was upon us."
One morning, Abdullah announced that it was time for Said to come diving with him. Said had been so busy, he had almost forgotten that he wanted to learn to dive. Now Abdullah gave him a clip to put on his nose, and together they jumped into the water. The sea was warm, but Said shivered, and his heart seemed to beat very fast. Abdullah told him to hold on to a rope dangling from the sambuk's side.
"We won't go very deep," he said. "We'll just look around under the surface of the water for as long as you can hold your breath."
He took Said's hand in his and told him to take a big deep breath. Then they dived, and suddenly a whole new world opened up before Said's eyes. The vague, blurred shapes he'd seen from the boat became brightly coloured fish. He could see beautiful corals and weeds swaying in the current. In his wonder, he forgot his fear. After what seemed a very short time, they surfaced.
Well done, said Abdullah.
Said grinned.
Can we do it again?
He asked. And so they swam beneath the surface again and again, each time going a little deeper, until eventually Abdullah said they were ready to try a real dive. Said no longer felt afraid. He watched his father slide the sinking stone on its rope over his foot and hang the basket round his neck.
When we reach the oyster bed, I shall let go of your hand and you must swim slowly to the surface, Abdullah told him.
Said nodded. He took a big breath. His father let go of the sinking stone and then they were descending fast. At the oyster bed, Said felt his father squeeze his hand and release it, and slowly he began to rise again. When he looked up, he could see bright shafts of sunlight filtering down through the water, and there was Ahmed looking over the side of the boat, anxiously waiting for him. But Ahmed need not have worried. Said still had air in his lungs when he reached the surface. The other divers and haulers were watching too, and they all cheered. Even the Nokoda clapped him on the back and told him that he would make a fine diver.
Just like your father, he added,
and Said felt a warm glow of pride fill his heart. After that, Said practiced diving for a little while every day. Gradually, he was able to hold his breath underwater for longer and longer stretches. In the evenings over supper, he joined in the men's conversation. When they asked him what he had seen that day, he told of fish with long noses, of others with long tails, of brightly coloured ones, and some that puffed up and stuck out their spines. The divers, in return, told him which to avoid and which would not hurt him. He learnt that the great flat ray had a fiery tail, and that the beautiful fish with stripes like a lion could poison you with its spines. There was one fish which looked so much like its surroundings, you could mistake it for sand and stones. But if you trod on it, that would be the end of you.
And don't be misled by the pretty little seahorses, said Ahmed. Close your eyes if one comes near. It was thanks to a seahorse my cousin Juma came by his blindness.
His father taught him to curl his feet around the rope when he was hauled up.
A shark can be attracted by the light-coloured soles of your feet, he warned.
Said tried to remember everything he was told and thought of his father's words, learn the ways of the sea. Sometimes Nokodas from other boats visited in the evenings for coffee and conversation. They usually discussed the value of their catch. At other times, a tawash, a merchant from a nearby port, came in his small dhow and boarded the sambuk. Said watched the Nokoda unlock the wooden chest and take out the knotted red cloth containing the pearls. Carefully, he would open it and spread it out before the merchant, inviting him to examine them. The merchant would take out his little copper sieves, 24 of them, with holes of different sizes, to grade the pearls. Then he would weigh them in tiny scales, against agate weights if the pearls were sizable, against thin metal weights if the pearls were small. If he liked the look of any of them, much bargaining would take place. Eventually, he and the Nokoda would reach an agreement through a special secret sign language by touching fingers under cover of the red cloth. Said knew that the merchant would sell the pearls to rich dealers from India. He tried to imagine the little seed pearls decorating a beautiful wedding gown. It was difficult because he did not really know what such a gown looked like. He had never seen one. But he could imagine a crown. His father had drawn one in the sand with a stick. Perhaps some of the larger pearls would be set in gold and sit on a Maharaja's head. Said had heard stories about a Persian nobleman who had ordered thousands of small pearls to sew onto his horse trappings. What a sight that must be! Towards the close of the season, when the catch looked no better than the previous years, something happened to change everything. It was the end of the day, and Abdullah had dived more than 40 times. He was tired, but he decided to make just one more dive because he was fairly certain that he had spotted a clutch of oysters, a packed mass, clinging round and growing out from each other. This was the Tabra he had been hoping to find all these weeks, for such a clutch was invariably pearl-bearing. The Tabra had been out of his reach on the previous dive. It was in very deep water, and he did not have enough breath left to get to it. His heart was beating with excitement as he filled his lungs with more air than he had ever taken in before. Then he plunged, dropping down into deep waters with the aid of the sinking stone. Searching the green darkness, he found the place where he thought he had seen it. Sure enough, there it was, just below him. He had been under the water for more than 2 minutes now, but he was confident that he still had enough breath left to reach the Tabra and get to the surface. What he did not notice in his eagerness was a huge dark shape looming towards him. As he prized the great clutch of oysters away from the rock and dropped it into his string bag, the shark was upon him. On the deck of the Sambuk, Said was waiting for his father to pull on the rope, signalling that he was ready to be hauled to the surface. Ahmed had put Said in charge of the rope whilst he mended a sail, telling him to shout when Abdullah tugged, and together they would pull him up. But suddenly the rope went slack. Said let out a cry of alarm. Ahmed rushed to him. "What is it?" he asked.
"The rope is not heavy anymore. My father, he must have let go,"
said Said, as he tried to hold back his tears, for he knew that something must be wrong. Ahmed shouted to the others, "Diver in trouble! Diver in trouble!" All around him, the divers leapt back into the sea in search of Said's father. Suddenly, Said saw a large black triangular fin. He let out another cry of alarm, but it was not skimming through the water, it was rising upwards towards him. He peered more closely, and he could make out something clinging to the underside of the shark. Said could not believe his eyes. It was his father, his hands thrust deep into the shark's gills. As he surfaced, he let go of the great fish. It swam away, dazed and struggling for breath. Abdullah was gasping for air too, gulping hard. Other divers surrounded him, buoying him up in the water. The Nokuda and Ahmed reached down and helped him into the Sambuk. He lay on the deck, exhausted. The Nokuda slipped the basket, bulging with oysters, from around his neck.
"A Tabra," he said. "And the shark wanted it too, eh?"
Abdullah smiled weakly. "A Tabra," he replied, and squeezed his son's hand. Later that evening, with food and coffee inside him, Abdullah described what had happened. When he had seen the shark heading straight for him, he sensed that it was angry and about to attack. It was unusual, but perhaps the shark was hunting the fish which was swimming about close to the oysters, and Abdullah had got in its way. He knew that he must remain calm and use his brains if he were to survive. He sank down to the seabed and lay on the bottom to show the shark that he was no threat to him, and prayed to Allah to grant him enough breath to prevent him from drowning. But the shark attacked again. and this time Abdullah plunged his hands into its gills. Unable to breathe, the shark was desperate to escape and rose to the surface as Abdullah hoped it would. The others listened in wonder to his tale, a tale which would grow more colourful with the telling, for told it would be by every diver and every hauler on the Sambuk to their children and their children's children. But the tale was not finished.
"You forget, Abdullah," said the Nokhuda. "You have not yet opened the Tabra. In view of your bravery, the first pearl in the clutch of shells shall be yours."
And so it was that when the flag of departure was hoisted, Said sailed home, his father at his side, with riches in his hand and riches in his heart.